Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to your USA Hockey Conference. At this time, all participants will be in a listen-only mode, but later we will conduct a question-and-answer session, which instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require audio assistance, you can press star then zero and an audio operator will assist you. And as a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. And now I would like to introduce your host, Dave Fisher. Dave, please go ahead.
John, thanks very much. And ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us as we get set tomorrow for the start of the fourth annual Hockey Weekend Across America celebration presented by Reebok. And I think all of you know that in 2008, USA Hockey put the framework around this weekend to give everybody in the hockey community a chance at all levels to celebrate the game and those involved, and also to help expose our sport to new audiences. And we're excited about the buy-in from the hockey community at large on this event. I think, you know, Friday is that's be tomorrow, where your favorite hockey jersey day nationally, and we encourage people to send their pictures to us at facebook.com/USAHockey and share the celebration of the day tomorrow. On Saturday, it's Bring a Friend to the Rink Day. And it's great that we have over 200 rinks across the country signed up to participate in Try Hockey for Free events. We expect that more than 4,000 new kids will try the game for the very first time. 48 of the 50 states participating, so that's a big success. And then Sunday we close out with Celebrate Local Hockey Heroes Day. And we're pleased also now to have NBC and the NHL involved with Hockey Day in America. Of course, the National Hockey League has been involved in this initiative since the beginning days in 2008. So that's the framework of the weekend. We're pleased to have Dave Ogren and Gary Bettman with us on the call today to talk hockey right up your alley. And to get us started today, rather, I'd like to first introduce the executive director of USA Hockey, Dave Ogren. I think you all know that Dave's in his third stint with the organization, having started as a PR director when the organization had but four full-time employees in 1978. He oversaw USA Hockey as its executive director in the mid-90s and now returned for his third stint in 2005. And without further ado, here's Dave.
Dave, thank you very much, and thanks to everybody who is on the call. We appreciate your love of hockey, your attention to hockey, and it's a pleasure to, I think for the third year in a row, to give you sort of a State of the Union on USA Hockey and Hockey in America as part of our Hockey Weekend Across America activities. Dave's given you the framework for the whole thing. This is intended to be a grassroots promotional initiative and very flexible. In fact, even though we call it a weekend, there's some parts of the country that have been doing things all week long. And in fact, Philadelphia began with a series of events taking place as far back as this last Monday. Reebok has been a title sponsor of this, or a presenting sponsor of this, since the very beginning. We're grateful to them and to Liberty Mutual as well. And we would not be able to have the level of visibility that we have for this event and for most of the things that we do if it wasn't for our partnership with the National Hockey League, which I'll get into a little bit later. And as Dave said, this year we're particularly excited to have the NHL and NBC coming on board to give us a real high-profile climax to the weekend with Hockey Day in America on Sunday, where between NBC and Versus, you're going to have basically day-long live game coverage and lots of interstitial programming that's going to show you all of the facets and flavors of hockey across the United States. Our game is in pretty good shape these days. I think, like the NHL, we're never satisfied. We're always reaching higher. But having had a very difficult last several years with the American economy, I'm happy that we've been able to come through that period of time and see growth, not a loss in membership. Sometimes it's better to be, you know, lucky than smart, but 3 years ago we created a department for the sole purpose of focusing on the growth and retention of membership. And since we launched that membership development initiative in June of 2008, we have seen three consecutive years of growth, especially at the grassroots entry level. And a few weeks ago, for the very first time in the history of our organization, we passed the 100,000 mark for registered players who are 8 and under. And I think with a sport that is not inexpensive to play, a finite number of facilities, a fairly stagnant universe of ice sheets at the moment, it's a real testimony to the hard work of an awful lot of people that we've been able to continue to see that growth, as well as at the women's level and the adult level. A very important initiative of ours that really permeates everything that we do at the current time is called the American Development Model. A lot of you know about this. It was launched 2 years ago, January of 2009. It is an age-specific approach to training and developing players. We studied and stole some of the best ideas from other countries, from other sports. But it is really for our sport a cultural change because there's a lot of people who are used to doing things a certain way for a long time. But as we've been successful in educating more and more people about what the ADM is and stands for, we're having tremendous success in getting people to jump on the bus. Cross ice hockey for the youngest players is a real big piece of this, and that is a major focus in the season that we're in the midst of right now for the whole country. It solves a lot of finite ice issues by making better use of ice time. It gives all of the young players more puck time for learning the game, and it helps the players develop the experience of developing skills in a small area, which is, despite the size of a professional or European ice surface, it's where so many games are won and lost. The ADM is going to be broadly on display this weekend at Millennium Park in Chicago, and that will be covered on NBC's Hockey Day in America programming on Sunday. So we have a long way to go, but we have an excellent team of our regional managers who are our Johnny Appleseeds, if you will, our evangelists in the field, working with coaches, with local programs on showing people how the ADM works and spreading the word. They've done a great job in educating coaches and parents, and that's only going to build our success as we go forward. Also at this present time, we have under consideration an examination of our body checking ages and are taking a look at the how that is best going to be managed with an eye on skill development, safety, as well as recruitment and retention of players. Our goals in so many ways are really focused on two things. One is growth. One is better player development all the way up to the elite players, which obviously accrues to the benefit of the NHL and to the United States in terms of medal performance, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. Our coaching program, our coaching education program is something which we've been proud of and which began in the early 1970s. It's gone through several stages of evolution. It is really held up within the American amateur sport community as a model. And this year it is going to be undertaking a significant new step in evolution. We're currently developing online age-specific modules that will mesh with the American Development Model, and starting in the 11-12 season, our coaches will be required to take the module that matches the age group that they are coaching. This is going to make it easier to deliver information to people without them always having to attend clinics, but it's also going to be the most current information and better equip them to coach the kids of a specific age. On the business side, we have gone through, as I said, and we all know, challenging economic times the last 2 years, but I'm very, very pleased that we have, even most recently in the last few months, signed two very major sponsorships, one with RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, who's making a major push into the United States and obviously has a long and successful history supporting hockey at the professional level and with Hockey Canada. And also, we just announced a few days ago a new partnership with Marriott, which is going to help serve our large membership and provide great support to USA Hockey. Also, our corporate partners, and this would include RBC, Liberty Mutual, Degree, and also Total Hockey, who's our official retailer, they have put already over $2 million back into grassroots programs on behalf of growing the game in the United States, and we are very appreciative of that. On the international side, I think everybody knows that less than 2 months ago, we hosted the World Junior Championship in Buffalo. It was the most successful event that we've ever hosted in the United States from an attendance and financial aspect. The United States won the bronze medal after losing to Canada in the semis. And so it's encouraging to see our team bounce back after a disappointing loss to win a medal in its final game. But it was also encouraging to me that our players went home not satisfied because our expectations have risen to the point where if we're not playing in the last game and the last day, we feel like we've fallen a little bit short. The city of Buffalo did an unbelievable job in supporting that event, and I need to thank the Buffalo Sabres organization. We had over 330,000 people attend that tournament. which was by over 125,000, the most of any U.S. hockey tournament that USA Hockey has ever been responsible for hosting. And we also had our first back-to-back medals with that bronze following a gold last year, our first back-to-back medals in the event. And, of course, we again had blanket coverage on NHL Network, which we appreciate so much. Anecdotal statistic for you that Dave Fisher gave me earlier today, which I had a sense of without having the specifics on. Prior to the launch of our National Team Development Program, which a lot of you know is in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and has been out in operation since 97, prior to the launch of the NTDP, our winning percentage in the World Junior Championship was 413. Since the launch of the NTDP, our winning percentage in the World Junior Championship is 646. And so I think that shows very clearly, just in a simple statistic, the fact that we've made a lot of progress. Our next big event in the United States will be the Women's World Championship next year. It's in early April. It will be held in Burlington, Vermont, in connection with the University of Vermont. And once again, a tournament that's in reasonable proximity to the Canadian border. So we know that we're going to have an exciting atmosphere and a lot of full buildings for the athletes to compete in. Our under-18 team and our under-17 team, these are the two teams which make up the National Team Development Program, just returned from events overseas undefeated. The under-17s won all three of their games in Slovakia earlier this month, and the under-18 team went 4-0 in the Five Nations tournament in the Czech Republic. This is a program that is really producing results now, and I think it continues to earn the respect of the hockey world nationwide and, around the world, obviously. Also coming up for us as participants, not in the United States, but in the next few months, we have both the under-18 Men's World Championship, the Women's World Championship in Zurich, and the Men's World Championship, which will take place in Bratislava in early May. But we are at the point now where we expect to be in a gold medal game in every event that we play in, and it's a high bar, but we've had a lot of success with that, and we're going to keep climbing until we can do that all of the time. So much of this is supported by our relationship with the NHL, which has never been better. It improves all of the time, and it is really focused on a couple of different elements. Growth of the game, development of elite players, and the elements of the American development ladder, which would be our National Team Development Program, the USHL and American Junior Hockey, and the NCAA. Gary has cited a statistic at the very beginning of this season when we had the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame ceremony that for the first time this year, over 20% of the players on NHL rosters on opening night were Americans. That's an all-time high. Our goal, obviously, is to keep moving that number up. We have a national footprint today like we didn't have 20 years ago. And while not every single franchise may necessarily be selling out every game and fully healthy, the fact that we now have hockey in so many parts of the country has been tremendous for us. A couple of other stats that are interesting. In our Pacific District, since the San Jose Sharks in 91 and the Anaheim Ducks in 93 came into the league, our growth in registered players has gone up 240%. In our Rocky Mountain District, since Dallas came in 93, Phoenix in 96, and Colorado moved in 98, our growth has up 276%. And in the Southeast, since Tampa Bay, Florida, Carolina, Nashville, and Atlanta joined the league, our growth is up 493% in that district. And on opening night this year, there were players, American players, from 25 different states on NHL rosters. So unlike after the Miracle on Ice in 1980, when just about any elite American hockey player came from Minnesota, Michigan, or Massachusetts, it's now a national game much more than ever before. And when the NHL relocates, when the NHL expands, when NHL clubs are planted, they create interest in the game, and USA Hockey has the infrastructure to capitalize on that. And it's a very, very, I think, synergistic relationship, and we couldn't be happier with it. We have several general managers on our high-performance committee. They advise us on the selection of players for national teams. And we've got marketing and promotional collaborations on the business side, which are deep and extensive. And as a matter of fact, I'm calling you from New York right now, where we've had a lot of meetings the last 2 days on both NHL Network topics as well as sponsorship issues. We have a great staff. We have thousands of dedicated volunteers around the country working hard on behalf of the sport every day. The state of the hockey is quite strong, but we're working hard to make it better all the time. This NHL network, NHL partnership, I mean, is vital. Our players, we believe, are only going to become a bigger and bigger part of the league. And hockey in the U.S. may never be where we want it to be, but it's never been better than it is today.
All right, Dave, thanks very much. And we're also pleased from Tampa, Florida, have the commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman, with us in his 18th year. And I don't believe there's anyone that cares more about the sport overall than Commissioner Bettman. And Gary, please go ahead.
Thank you, Dave. And thank you, Dave Ogren. When you listen to the scope and breadth of everything that USA Hockey is doing and doing so well, it's a testament to Dave, his leadership, and to the tremendous support he gets from his staff, from his board, and from all the volunteers. Thank you all for joining us on this call as well. Personally and on behalf of the NHL, we're pleased to be joining USA Hockey and the entire hockey community to celebrate the fourth annual Hockey Weekend Across America, which, as Dave told you, is being sponsored and presented by Reebok. And it all takes place this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday across the United States. And from an NHL standpoint, this is an endeavor that we've been involved in its first year in 2008. We've been consistently a part of it, and it's something that not only do we think is important, it's something that we look forward to every year. While we at the NHL try to celebrate our sport every day, we think it's important to have a particular focus and a particular time for celebrating not only the sport in the United States, but also to celebrate the parents, the volunteers, the mentors, the coaches, the official, everyone who's involved in our game at all level, and that's in part what this weekend's about. We're also delighted that our network broadcast partner, NBC, is going to be playing a huge role with us on Sunday. In conjunction with McDonald's sponsorship, NBC will be providing 6 hours of Hockey Day in America on NBC coverage, and that's, again, a coordinated part of Hockey Weekend Across America. NBC sports coverage will begin at noon Eastern time with a pregame show Sunday, followed by regional coverage of 3 games. The Washington Capitals will be in Buffalo against the Sabres. The Philadelphia Flyers will be at Madison Square Garden against the New York Rangers. And the Detroit Red Wings will be playing the Minnesota Wild at the XL Energy Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. And these games will have staggered starts beginning at 12:35 after the pregame show. And that way they can cut back and forth and show you what's going on in all the different venues. And those games will be followed at 3:30 by the Pittsburgh Penguins against the Chicago Blackhawks in a game from the United Center in Chicago. In addition to that coverage, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, the NBC Sports Group will also provide live national coverage on Versus of the Heritage Classic Outdoor Game from McMahon Stadium in Calgary, where the Montreal Canadiens will be hosted by the Calgary Flames. So this is a big day of television coverage for our game and for our fans and for anyone who has any interest at all in hockey. The tagline for Hockey Weekend Across America is watch it, play it, live it. And we think we're doing that on all fronts. In terms of watching it, we're on pace to attract more than 20 million fans to our arenas for the 10th consecutive season. 22 of our NHL clubs are even with or ahead of last season's attendance. Our television viewership numbers are increasing strong and only getting stronger. And so people are watching it both live and on television. Play it for the first time ever. the number of American players, as Dave Ogren said, aged 8 and under has surpassed 100,000, and that is a huge accomplishment and I think paints an extraordinarily bright picture for the future of our game. So the present is solid as well as the future. American players are doing extraordinarily well in the NHL, and there are more people playing the game at all levels than ever before in the United States. And while Dave mentioned quoting me, I'll quote him quoting me, that over 20% of the players in the NHL this season are U.S. players, U.S.-born players. If you think back to, I think it was 1983-84, the number was 13%. So we have seen tremendous growth in terms of the rooting and participation of the U.S. and U.S. players in our game. And in terms of living it, hockey fans are connecting to the game at all levels in ways that people never imagined before. The use of technology is unparalleled in our sport. Hockey fans tend to be the biggest users of technology, the most tech-savvy, and so NHL.com, the NHL Network, NHL Radio, and all our other platforms, NHL Mobile, are all ways that our fans are living the game as well. So, again, we are excited about the weekend ahead as we celebrate Hockey Weekend across America, and that specifically includes Hockey Day in America on NBC and Versus on Sunday. And as Dave Ogren said, this relationship, that is the relationship between the National Hockey League and USA Hockey, is extremely important, and we look forward to better things ahead, even better things ahead. And I'll disagree with Dave Ogren on one thing he said in concluding. We are doing well, but we will achieve our goal of making this game even bigger and brighter and stronger than anybody ever imagined, particularly in the United States. So thank you all for joining us and being part of this call.
Thanks very much, Gary. And again, just a reminder, this call is being recorded. We'll be posted at usahockey.com, hockeyweekendacrossamerica.com following the call. And I'll turn it back over now to John to take us through the question and answer portion of our teleconference today. John?
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question or comment, press the star, then one key on your telephone to queue up for a question. So again, if you have any questions or comments, press the star, then one key on your telephone to queue up for a question. Okay, I am showing numerous questions. And our first is coming from John Warrow from Associated Press.
Hi, can you hear me?
Go ahead, John.
Good. It's for Dave Ogre and Gary Bettman, and it's connected to the whole Buffalo, the success that you guys had around Buffalo with the World Junior Championships and Buffalo's place in USA Hockey and the NHL. What are your thoughts about the ownership change and how much more stability does Terry Pegula potentially bring to this community as far as keeping this community vibrant as a hockey market? And when do you, and Gary, when do you expect the sale to be approved?
Gary?
Well, the short answer is, and I'm not sure that Dave Ogren's in a position to comment on the ownership in Buffalo.
Yeah.
But Tom Golisano with Larry Quinn did a terrific job redeveloping, reestablishing this franchise coming out of an extremely difficult time. Terry Pegula has a real passion for the game of hockey. I think he's been a season ticket holder in Buffalo for decades. He's got ties to Western New York, and this was something that was important to him and he wanted to do. His ties to hockey also run deep. He's made an extremely large contribution to the development of collegiate hockey at Penn State University, where he's an alum. And, you know, there comes a point in a person's life where sometimes they want to focus on other things, or they might not want to be in a position to give something the attention they think it deserves. And so while the Sabres were not on the market for sale, this was really a case of Terry Pegula stepping forward on more than one occasion to ask if he could buy the club from Tom. And Tom ultimately said, you know what, I'm okay with that. I know the franchise will be in good hands, and so this will be another step in the franchise's future stability, and not that it was ever unstable, because the franchise has been in good hands, but I think fans in Buffalo have absolutely nothing to worry about, that ultimately when, assuming the board approves the transaction, which is not done yet, but I think is probably going to happen rather soon since it carries the recommendation of the executive committee, nobody in Buffalo needs to worry about the future of this franchise. It will be in good hands, as it has been.
Does that do it for you, John?
Yeah, that's good. So soon, I guess there's reports that it may come tomorrow.
I don't think it's closing tomorrow.
Okay.
But soon.
Thank you. And we'll take our next question from Adam Benigni from WGRZ-TV.
Mr. Bettman, again, thank you. I was going to ask you virtually everything that John Woro just did. We're the NBC affiliate in Buffalo, and we'll be actually starting the Hockey Day in America coverage a half hour early with a pregame show. And my specific follow-up to you is, will the Board of Governors vote on the approval tomorrow? Is that scheduled? Can you confirm that?
The vote is an ongoing process. The vote's being conducted by fax. And so when we do it by fax, since we don't have a meeting scheduled, there's a period of time in which people have to vote. And then after the vote, assuming approval, then you have to go through the actual closing of the transaction. So everything's on schedule, but it's just not done yet. But I don't think anybody needs to be concerned. And by the way, we thank you for the extended coverage. We appreciate what NBC does for our game, both at the NBC Sports level and at the affiliate level as well.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question is from Richard Labby from LA Press.
Yes, a question for Gary. How are you doing, Gary?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. And maybe actually a couple ones. I'm sure you're aware of Michael Guerin's comments yesterday in Atlanta regarding the franchise and the possibility of a move. What's your take on that?
I think you have to talk to Michael Guerin about why he said what he said. I don't typically comment on everything that every owner says about his franchise. As we converse right now, there are no plans to do anything with that franchise. And if the franchise is struggling and having issues, then that's something ultimately that will have to be dealt with. But I didn't view yesterday's article as particularly newsworthy.
The other question, Gary, it's almost 20 years now since the Lightning entered the picture here, and after that, obviously, a bunch of other teams from the South came in. How would you assess the so-called NHL experiment in the South?
I don't think it's an experiment. We have franchises that have done extraordinarily well. We've had Stanley Cups in Anaheim, Dallas, Tampa, Carolina. We've had franchises that have struggled with their on-ice performance, and that has impacted attendance. But as a league, we're playing to a decade of 20 million-plus people attending our games. We played at 94% of capacity on average. And I know people like to look at attendance figures and make a big deal about them, but I think it was 4 years ago that the Chicago Blackhawks were either 29th or 30th in the league in attendance, and now they're either first or second in the league in attendance. Our franchises are strong and solid, and even when they go through a difficult period, they can come out of it. I remember not too long ago, within the last decade, when there was speculation that the Canadian franchises were struggling so badly that there would only be one left. And now those franchises all are doing extraordinarily well. And so, you know, I think it's not a good idea to take snapshots of these things. And as you know, we try to avoid relocation if we can. When we can't, we're unhappy about it, but we try to do everything possible to avoid it.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. And we'll take our next question from Craig Custance from the Sporting News.
Hey, Gary and Dave, thanks for doing this. Kind of a follow-up, Gary, to Michael's comments yesterday. How optimistic are you that they will ultimately find a local buyer in Atlanta?
Well, I'm hopeful. I know they've been at it for a while. Not as long as I've now read in some of the proceedings that have been filed, but I know they've been at it certainly more than a year or so. And it's a struggle right now for them with respect to both of the franchises. The basketball team isn't in much different shape than the hockey team, and with all the problems that they've had and the ownership issues that they've had, maybe it's not a surprise, and hopefully they can find a way to right it. But it has been a struggle for them.
And Dave, I'm curious. You talk about the growth of the game in the U.S. at the youth level. Is there any concerns, kind of from your part, just on the increase of concussions at the NHL, all the attention that's getting? Do you worry about that, you know, seeping into parents' decision to get their kids in the States started in hockey?
No, absolutely. I think, quite frankly, for the amount that Gary and I agree on things, which is 95% of the time, clearly, even when you have a fight that gets televised from the NHL, it's not good for the perception of people who are thinking about getting their kid involved in the game, especially if there isn't a tradition in that family of playing hockey. So I think, like you have seen in so many sports, certainly football more than any, but, you know, it's been very much a topic of conversation in hockey, from the GMs and owners meetings all the way down, you know, to our level. Everyone is always concerned about safety as a very paramount quality of their game. So we always are looking at how can we minimize those concussions, how can we reduce concussions. Any game that has collisions in it is going to have some risk associated with it. But in terms of how our game is taught, how our game is coached, how our game is officiated, and how kids learn to play at the youngest level, we hope that we can reduce the threat of concussions. But it's very much a concern. Our chief medical officer, Dr. Mike Stewart, from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, who had three boys who played Division I scholarship college hockey and two in the NHL. So he approaches it with a real pragmatic, real-world viewpoint. He presented at our winter meeting a month ago results of a concussion summit, which they hosted this past fall with some help from us. And, it involved a lot of data and a lot of information that we need to use and to put into our coaching education program and for our playing rules committees to evaluate and consider, because we have an obligation as an amateur sport to keep it as safe as we can. And so that's, it's always a concern. In fact, I look at the attention as positive. Because regardless of whether anyone's concerned about the loss of a member or not, what's most important is that the people that play your game, are playing in as safe an environment as they can.
I assure you that no one is more focused on the importance of player safety than we are at the National Hockey League. The issue of concussions is extremely important and one that's getting a lot of our attention, and that's not something new. I think you can go back to 1997 when we were the first sports league to have a working concussion study group, which involved our trainers, our physicians, the Players Association, and league people as well. We were the first sports league to do baseline testing. We were the first sports league to have a protocol for diagnosis and return to play decisions, and it's something we're continuing to work on. And I don't know how many of you heard my media availability at the All-Star game, but it's interesting because it appears off of preliminary data that the rise in concussions isn't really in any significant way coming from things like head checks or fighting or the like. It's really coming from collisions, players falling into the boards and glass, and running into their own teammates and the like. That's where the increase is coming. And before, at least at the NHL level, you legislate how you're going to deal with trying to prevent concussions, you've got to understand how and why they're occurring. And part of the reason you're seeing an increase in the number of concussions is, quite frankly, we're doing a much better job of diagnosing them. Things that in the past wouldn't have been diagnosed or picked up as a concussion are now in the statistical database as a concussion. That's not to minimize it. That means that we're being as proactive as possible, and we're not resting on the subject because we know there's more work to be done.
Well, thanks, guys.
Okay, thank you. And we'll take our next question from Kevin Allen from USA Today.
Hi, guys. Thanks for doing this. I have a question for both Gary and Dave. Dave, you've obviously been involved in USA Hockey for more than three decades. When you look back to the late 70s and what the hope for USA Hockey was, did you envision this level that you would reach? And if so, or even if not, what's been the biggest surprise in those years?
I don't think I could honestly say that I did envision it, Kevin, but I will also admit that in 1978 I was pretty green, and you know, like a lot of people who would have been 25 back then, you know, your horizon maybe isn't that far off. But certainly in terms of where our status was in the world and the representation of Americans in the NHL, the extent and breadth of the USA Hockey programs, the size of our membership, it was a fraction of what it is now. We're having a lot of success today because of what has been built, not in the last 10 years, but over the last, you know, 30 plus years. You know, it takes a long time to, you know, to create a mountain. And so while I don't think as far back as 1978 or even 1980 when we won the gold medal in Lake Placid that we necessarily envisioned that we would be almost chronically, you know, playing for gold medals at the international level or have the kind of presence that we have in the NHL, I think over time you realize what is possible and you keep pushing the envelope. You know, sort of a unofficial slogan that I use internally a lot is never satisfied. You can be happy for a moment and say we've had some success, we've had some growth, this is terrific, and you know, after a brief pat on the back, you go back to work because you want to be bigger, you want to be better, you want to grow more. So I don't think I could say that 30 years ago I saw where we would be today. I think we began to see it, though, a lot more clearly 15 years ago. And while there's a lot of work that was put in back in the 70s and 80s by people you know well, like Art Berglund and Lou Vero and Dave Peterson and Tim Taylor and so forth, the NTDP creation was a catalyst. You know, it was sort of a watershed moment. It was a different approach to things. And while it has certainly not been singularly responsible for the success we've had, it was a sea change. And I think that a lot of the other levels of hockey in the U.S., especially American junior hockey, have gotten better as well.
A biggest surprise, though? Did you have one big surprise?
No, I don't think so. I don't like to be surprised. I like to be able to be in control of things to see what's coming. I think, quite frankly, I do sit back and put a smile comes to my face when I look at the number of international tournaments we played in 2009 and 2010. And with the exception of the one that takes place during the NHL season, the Men's World Championship, so we're drawing on a very restricted pool of players, we actually ended up playing in the championship game of every single other tournament, of every age level, men's, women's, inline, sled hockey, every variety. People wouldn't have been able to envision that, you know, even a dozen or 15 years ago.
Thank you.
And Kevin, I think part of the answer as well is that the game at all levels has never gotten more exposure. I suppose some of that comes from the fact that the NHL, over the three decades you're referring to, is in more places than it's ever been and has more exposure across every media platform than has ever been the case. And children get inspired to play the game when they see stars, role models, heroes play the game as well. And so that exposure, coupled with all the great work that USA Hockey has done at the grassroots level, it almost becomes like a snowball rolling downhill. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger because of the confluence of all the things that are going on with the increased exposure.
And if I can follow up with you, Gary, on that a little bit, Dave can point to real tangible results that come out of the NHL going in non-traditional markets with increases of participation. Can you just briefly kind of summarize the importance of the NHL being in the non-traditional markets in terms of, you know, the national footprint for the league?
Well, it's not so much a question of non-traditional markets. It's a question of having a footprint that's truly national. The fact of the matter is, if you're not an original six team, meaning if you're not one of the four in the United States, does that mean the other markets, the other teams are all non-traditional? You know, do you characterize St. Louis or Los Angeles or Pittsburgh as non-traditional? I think the answer is no. We're just in more places than we've ever been. We're in big markets with large populations and state-of-the-art arenas where people who are interested in sports can now have a firsthand interest in seeing hockey and being part of the hockey community, coupled with the fact that we live in a very mobile, shrinking world and that lots of people who grew up in one place now live in another place and want their hockey fix. So I think it's been a combination of things. My reference to the other franchises was simply to indicate that who's to say what's traditional or non-traditional. They're all important markets for us.
Thanks, Gary.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And our next question comes from Mike Morrell from NHL.com.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. Dave, thanks for taking the time. Commissioner, what impresses you most about the USA Hockey's ADM model? Why do you think it's important to the future of our sport, I guess not only in the United States but in North America?
My shorthand for doing it is because it's designed for kids to have fun getting involved with hockey and playing hockey. Yes, it teaches skills. Yes, it's good for physical fitness. Yes, it's good for discipline and all the other things that sports can do for a child in the formative years. But it's really more about having fun with the game and learning to be a part of the game without being so structured that we're choking kids off before they can really develop their skills to a level that would make them even better players.
And, Dave, I'm curious, during one of the league's marquee events, the NHL All-Star Game, what type of feedback you did receive from that ADM clinic in Raleigh during All-Star Weekend?
At the softball, Mike. we received great feedback. North Carolina is a real interesting area. It isn't what one would consider a traditional hockey area. It's experienced great growth. You know, Pete Karmanos, who's invested so much in the game at the amateur level, originally having been in Michigan, has done a lot of the same down in North Carolina. He's a zealot for the sport in a good way. And we had, as I think you might know, a phenomenal turnout at their practice facility in Raleigh. And we had the opportunity to show a rink jammed full of parents and coaches what the ADM is all about, what an ADM practice looks like with 80 kids on a sheet of ice at the same time at six stations running efficiently, having fun, paying attention, learning. So I think the reaction was great, and it's sort of emblematic of what explaining a new concept to people can do, because there's a lot of folks that might have misinformation about the ADM or they might not fully understand it. And when they can see it in action and they understand it better, they invariably say, oh, I get it now. This is terrific. And I think that was really the uniform reaction we got from the people in Raleigh.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And our next question comes from Rachel Brady from the Globe and Mail.
Hi, thanks for doing this today, guys. I had a question for both of you regarding actually fighting in hockey and how crucial it is maybe to the success of viewers and ticket sales. Do you think that the NHL or also, you know, at the USA Hockey level would lose ticket sales, interest in the game, TV ratings if fighting was actually removed from the game?
Well, this is Gary Bettman. The fact of the matter is, what you're asking is if we took a part of the game, not the most important part, not the most significant part, but something that has been a part of the game and removed it from the game, would it impact ticket sales and viewing? I don't think anybody knows for sure, but I do know all the research we do is that most of our fans and most by a large number, understand the role of fighting in the game and do not want to see it removed from the game. That's the feedback we get from our fans consistently when we do the research, and that applies to both Canada and the United States. That doesn't mean that at other levels of hockey, the rules we play under should be identical. And so we're not advocating that that's what hockey should be everywhere, but at the NHL level, our fans understand the way the game is played.
Is that by polling fans or? Yeah.
That's using the typical scientific method that people use to poll when they want to know what the reaction is to something, and it's something that we've done consistently over the years.
If you want me to answer that as well,
yeah,
Rachel,
sure.
You know, let me just say, you know, let me point out, fighting isn't legal at any level. You get penalized for it. And while certainly, as I look at our promotion of the game at the grassroots level, you know, I cringe when I see so much media coverage, especially in the electronic media, of the Penguins Islanders melee last week. But the fact of the matter is, there's less fighting in the NHL than there used to be, and it's significantly different than the stereotype people have of the game back from, you know, 1990 and before. The number of actual, you know, bench-clearing brawls you see is so few, and while it has its place, you know, in some one-on-one contact perhaps, I'm not personally a fan of the game, but I understand the role that it plays. I don't think it helps us sell it at the youngest level necessarily, but there's still much more attention paid to fighting when it occurs without people really looking at the fact that fighting overall is much happening. It's just simply happening much less than it did, you know, back prior to expansion and prior to some other rules changes that have taken place even at the NHL level over the last 15 years.
Well, actually, it's less this year than it was last year,
mm-hmm.
despite attention that a game or two has gotten.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. So if there are any further questions at this time, press the star, then 1 key on your telephone to pick you up for a question.
And I think, John, actually, appreciate it, but I think due to some schedules here, we're going to have to call it a conference call here this afternoon. Do appreciate everybody joining us today. Thanks especially to Dave Ogren and Gary Bettman. And enjoy Hockey Weekend Across America. More information, hockeyweekendacrossamerica.com. And thanks again for participating. Have a terrific weekend.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude your conference. You may now disconnect and have a great day.